at our top stories this hour. The Palestinian president condemns Israel's closure of several Palestinian NGOs and says the groups will continue to expose the regime's crimes irrespective of the shutdown order. The UN chief warns of a looming global food crisis if Western sanctions prevent Russia from exporting its fertilizers and agricultural products. And at least 34 people are killed and dozens more injured in two separate road accidents in southeast Turkey.
Hello and welcome. Your world news come to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. It's good to have you with us.
Top story this hour. The Palestinian president slams Israel's forced closure of seven Palestinian non-governmental organizations in the occupied West Bank. Mahmoud Abbas said the regime's unilateral sanctions or actions are unacceptable and in violation of the international law. While he hailed the international consensus condemning the closures, Abbas noted practical international measures are needed to stop Israel's aggressive policies. The Palestinian president added the NGOs will continue to expose the Israeli crimes, irrespective of the shutdown order. On Friday, nine European countries, including France and Germany, said they were deeply concerned by the Israeli move. The United Nations has also urged the regime to allow the NGOs to continue working.
Early on Thursday, the Israeli military has shot down seven Palestinian non-governmental civil society and human rights organizations in the occupied West Bank. The military broke into the offices of the organizations and confiscated property. Palestinians' foreign ministry has censored the raids as an attempt to silence the voice of truth and justice, saying rights groups remain the prime target of the regime because they document its crimes against Palestinians. Six of the organizations raided had been criminalized as terrorist organizations in October 2021 by Israel, which claimed they were affiliated with the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. The groups have decried the move as politically motivated and baseless. The organizations targeted on Thursday work in fields such as human rights, prisoner support, children's rights, and healthcare. The organizations that have been outlawed by Israel are Ad-Damir and Al-Haq, which document human rights violations by Israel, and the Union of Palestinian Women's Committees, Bisan Center for Research, DCI, Defense for Children International Palestine, as well as the Union of Agricultural Work Committees. The seventh organization was the Union of Health Work Committees. Since 1967, Israel has banned more than 400 local and international organizations, including all major Palestinian political parties. Analysts speculate that Israel had attacked the groups because they were becoming increasingly effective at exposing Israel's repression of Palestinian people.
That their Achilles heel is their ongoing horrific violations of human rights, which are losing them support throughout the world. And so they're apparently thinking that they can kill the messenger and get rid of those who are reporting on their crimes just by shutting them down on spurious pretenses.
Israeli forces raided, sealed, and imposed closure orders on the offices of seven prominent Palestinian human rights and social services organizations in the West Bank. The regime claims that those NGOs have links with the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, a claim they have rejected.
The Israeli army has deprived generations of Palestinians in the West Bank of their basic civil rights, including the right to expression, regularly using military force to suppress Palestinian people. The latest raid on Palestinian non-governmental human rights organizations and their designation as terrorist organizations have been denounced by UN experts and were rejected by nine European states that fund the targeted groups. The European countries also called Israel's allegations against the NGOs unsubstantiated. Last year, Israel's leading human rights group, B'Tselem, said in a report that Israel is not a democracy but an apartheid regime that systematically oppresses the Palestinians via military occupation and racist laws, is using laws, practices, and organized violence to cement the supremacy of one group over another.
Israel is obviously trying to silence the voices of critics who've been documenting the ongoing abuses of human rights, the murders of children, shooting down teenagers, bombing targets and killing all sorts of people, often at random. They're essentially ongoing massacres, not to mention the torture, which is a systematic feature of Israeli policy.
Israeli policies and practices toward Palestinians in the occupied Palestinian territories should be scrutinized, but only condemning Israeli raids on Palestinian civil society groups is not enough. It's high time the UN and international organizations took direct action against Israeli atrocities.
Welcome back. The UN chief warns of a looming global food crisis if Western sanctions prevent Russian fertilizers and agricultural products from reaching world markets.
It is important that all governments and the private sector cooperate, bringing them to market. Without fertilizer in 2022, there may not be enough food in 2023. Getting more food and fertilizer out of Ukraine and Russia is critical to further calm commodity markets and lower prices for consumers.
Guterres said the UN is working with the US and EU to overcome obstacles to get Russian food and fertilizers out to global markets. He added the world body will try to step up grain exports from Ukraine. Moscow and Kiev signed an UN brokered deal last month to resume grain exports despite the war in Ukraine and Western sanctions on Russia. Nearly 700,000 tons of Ukrainian grains and agricultural products have left Ukrainian ports this month. Russia and Ukraine accounted for around a third of global wheat exports before the war. In Turkey, at least 34 people have been killed and dozens more injured in two separate road accidents. Both accidents happened in places where collisions had taken place shortly before. The first crash involving a bus and an ambulance killed 15 people and injured 31 more on a motorway in Gaziantep province in southeast Turkey. The second deadly accident also happened as the emergency services were attending an earlier incident in Mardin province, also in southeast Turkey. On this occasion, at least 19 people were killed and nearly 30 injured after a truck driver hurtled into pedestrians. Officials say some of those injured are in critical condition. Brazil is set to hold a presidential election in less than 2 months. Thousands have attended a campaign rally for former president and leftist candidate Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva in Sao Paulo. Lula da Silva remains the front runner to win the high-stake vote for October the 2nd. The Workers' Party, party's candidate is leading all polls against right-wing incumbent Jair Bolsonaro. On Tuesday, the two top polling candidates kicked off their rival campaigns for what is believed to be the country's most polarized presidential race in decades. A runoff will follow if none of the candidates garners over 50% of the vote in the first round. Polls suggest that in case of a potential second round runoff, Lula da Silva will return to office. However, there are fears of political violence as Bolsonaro has hinted he will not cede power if defeated. Camila Escalante joined us a short while ago from Sao Paulo, where a rally for former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva just took place. She told us that more rallies are on the way in the coming days. Have a listen.
So we saw thousands of supporters here from many different organizations, different political parties and social movements. This is a coalition that's supporting Lula da Silva in this vote. Not only the Workers' Party, which is the largest political party in the country, the party that he belongs to, but of course also the Communist Party and the PSOL. And so there are very, big leaders and even celebrities have lended their support to President or former President Lula. Lula is across the board going to have a lot of very large rallies across the country, and this isn't even the Lula stronghold. In fact, this area, which is the south of Brazil, the state of Sao Paulo, the state of Paraná to the south of us, is actually known for being the stronghold of Jair Bolsonaro. And that being said, we're seeing large crowds. We're going to move to the northeast in the coming weeks. And the northeast, which is kind of known as like the more Caribbean area, it's Afro-descendant in population, is actually the stronghold of the Workers' Party. And we expect to see massive turnout there as well. But we'll be gauging the size of Jair Bolsonaro's rally turnout as well as the third place candidate, Ciro Gomes.
Yemeni officials accuse a Saudi-led coalition of stealing billions of dollars worth of crude oil from Yemen in recent years. Yemen's Minister of Oil and Minerals, Ahmed Abdullah Daris, says the coalition has looted over 130 million barrels of Yemen's oil since 2018. He says this translates to over $9 billion worth of crude oil. Saudi Arabia and some of its regional allies launched a devastating war on Yemen in 2015. The coalition has now stopped attacks on Yemen following a UN-brokered ceasefire that came into force several months ago, but it still maintains a blockade on the country. More travel chaos across Britain as transport workers strike, demanding higher pay and better working conditions. Unions are warning that the strikes could continue indefinitely unless their demands are met. Thousands, including railway and bus workers, kicked off their four-day strike on Thursday. Postal and dock workers are on strike too, bringing their sectors to a standstill. London's subway network has already grounded to a halt. Officials say only about 20% of rail network is open a day. More disruption is expected tomorrow. The industrial action comes against the backdrop of worsening economic conditions. A four-decade high inflation is driving up the cost of everything from food to energy and clothing. The falling real wages at a record pace have been hurting millions of Britons, especially middle-income families.
Shuttered stations and picket lines. Another day of severe disruption in the British capital.
We're just outside an underground station in West London, usually a very busy station, but today it is closed. The same thing or very limited service across many different stations in London for 24 hours.
It comes a day after another mass walkout of railway workers. The advice from the authorities, avoid traveling on the tube if possible.
I'm with them because it's true, when you're 60, why should you retire? I mean, why should they give you redundancy?
I mean, the cost of living's going up and all that. They're asking for a fair thing. Same in any job. They're offering silly things like 3% when inflation now is 10%. So I'm fully behind them.
I understand the people. That's normal. They are workers. They need more money, of course. Everything is rising.
A major bus walkout will also affect travel in parts of the capital. While a second day of rail strikes is expected to disrupt services around the country on Saturday. Almost all are part of widespread stoppages in recent months organized mainly by the National Union of Railway, Maritime and Transport Workers, locked in a face-off with the government over modernizing changes, wages and pensions, among other things. The ongoing strikes are inspiring other public sector workers, such as nurses and teachers, to do the same in the face of rampant inflation forecast to top 13% this year.
In the next few months, you're bound to see a convergence of trade unions all taking very direct action, calling their members on strike in an effort to protect the cost of living increases and the deterioration of wages that we've seen for workers across the country.
The government has threatened to use emergency powers to block future strikes. The unions, on the other hand, say they're not relenting unless they receive new deals they deem acceptable. Saeed Purizup, London.
Moving on, China keeping up military activities around Taiwan. Taipei says it has detected 17 Chinese warplanes and 5 warships around the island today. 4 Chinese aircraft reportedly crossed the Taiwan Strait's median line, which is an official barrier between the two sides in normal times. This amid heightened tensions over recent trips by U.S. lawmakers to the self-ruled island, which China claims is its own territory. Beijing has recently staged drills near the island, deploying fighter jets, warships, and ballistic missiles. Taiwan accuses the Chinese army of simulating an attack. Beijing says trips by U.S. officials interfere with its internal affairs and undermine the country's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Nearly 80 family members of 9/11 victims have urged U.S. President Joe Biden to reverse his order and send back billions in Afghanistan's frozen assets. Washington has been keeping Afghan's assets despite a deepening economic crisis in the country. Rahmatullah Bahwan reports from Kabul.
1 year ago, following the Taliban's return to power in Afghanistan, the U.S. froze about $7 billion in Afghan central bank assets and cut major international funding to the country. The measure, which pushed the Afghan economy to collapse, faced backlash from inside and outside Afghanistan. In February, U.S. President Joe Biden signed an order, splitting Afghan assets between relief aid to Afghanistan and 9/11 victims. On Tuesday, nearly 80 family members of 9/11 victims sent a letter to Biden, saying the money belongs to Afghans, urging him to release the money without delay.
In fact, no law, regulation, or moral orders permits a country to freeze the reserves of another country and create a situation where the owners of the money face economic suffering. The money, which is blocked by the U.S. and its allies, belongs to the people of Afghanistan. As I mentioned, based on the international laws and moral norms, the U.S. doesn't have the right to decide on Afghan assets, be it keeping the money or splitting it between 9/11 victims.
In Afghanistan, more and more people are going without job and cash, as the U.S. sanctions have paralyzed the public economy. Frustrated Afghans call for the release of Afghanistan's central bank assets and solidarity from the international community. Majority of the Afghan population is in need of humanitarian assistance. More than half of Afghans are going hungry, and more than 1 million children are severely malnourished. The humanitarian situation in Afghanistan is getting worse day by day, and the country needs its frozen funds for an economic recovery. It remains to be seen when Washington opens its eyes on the miseries of Afghans and returns their money. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
A handful of Republican governors have criticized the outrageous rhetoric of their party colleagues in the U.S. Congress, who have accused federal law enforcement officers of a politicized attack on former President Donald Trump after executing a court-approved search warrant on his Florida home, Mar-a-Lago, this week. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Oliver Lachland. The piece is titled, GOP Governors Rebuke Party Members' Outrageous Rhetoric Over Trump's Search. A handful of Republican governors have criticized the outrageous rhetoric of their party colleagues in the U.S. Congress, who have accused federal law enforcement officers of a politicized attack on former President Donald Trump after executing a court-approved search warrant on his Florida home, Mar-a-Lago, this week. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan, a Republican moderate, described attacks by party members as both absurd and dangerous, after a week in which certain Republicans have compared the FBI to the Gestapo and fundraised off the slogan, Defund the FBI. Speaking to ABC News on Sunday, 14th of August, Larry Hogan described the comparisons of the FBI to Nazi Germany's secret police, the Gestapo, made by Florida Senator Rick Scott as very concerning to me. It's outrageous rhetoric. He added, it is absurd and, you know, it's dangerous, especially after an armed man enraged by the raid was killed in Ohio when he tried to invade an FBI office. There are threats all over the place, and losing faith in our federal law enforcement officers and our justice system is a really serious problem for this country. On Monday, 8th of August, FBI agents executed a search warrant at the former president's private members' club and residence in South Florida, with an unsealed warrant later revealing that Donald Trump is under investigation for potential violation of the Espionage Act and obstruction of justice over his alleged mishandling of classified documents. The episode inflamed conservative commentators and conservative politicians still so deeply loyal to the former president, and was followed by the attack on the FBI field office in Cincinnati, Ohio, on Thursday, which led to a six-hour armed standoff that left the lone gunman shot dead. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan, who is rumored to be considering a run for the Republican presidential nomination in 2024, argued that many of his colleagues in Washington had been jumping to conclusions without any information, which I think was wrong. Larry Hogan added that revelations in the unsealed warrant were a serious concern, but argued investigators should provide further details on the contents of the seized documents. Larry Hogan's comments were followed by remarks from Arkansas Republican Governor Asa Hutchinson, who appeared on CNN on Sunday, 14th of August, and partially mirrored his Maryland counterpart. If the GOP is going to be a party of supporting law enforcement includes the FBI, Asa Hutchinson, a former U.S. prosecutor and private practice attorney, said. He added, we need to pull back on casting judgment on them. No doubt that higher-ups in the FBI have made mistakes. They do it. I've defended cases as well, and I've seen wrong actions. But we cannot say that whenever they, FBI officers, went in and did that search, that they were not doing their job as law enforcement officers. The comments marked a growing split on the extremist rhetoric from certain Republican Party members following the execution of the search warrant. Many senior Senate Republicans have remained largely quiet in the wake of the unprecedented law enforcement action, while others have appeared on conservative news channels supporting baseless accusations that the FBI planted evidence at Mar-a-Lago during the search. The Republican Congresswoman from Wyoming, Liz Cheney, a ranking member of the House committee investigating the January 6 attack on the U.S. Capitol, has condemned her colleague's rhetoric as sickening. Liz Cheney said, I have been ashamed to hear members of my party attacking the integrity of the FBI agents involved with the recent Mar-a-Lago search. Liz Cheney wrote on Thursday, these are sickening comments that put the lives of patriotic public servants at risk. Liz Cheney's stance is slowly being mirrored by other House Republicans after the warrant was made public on Friday, 12th of August. Dan Crenshaw, a Republican congressman from Texas, told the Axios website on Saturday that sloganeering against the FBI makes you look unserious. And ranking Homeland Security Committee member John Katko told the Axios website, this is not something you rush to judgment on. It's incumbent upon everyone to take a deep breath. Meanwhile, on Sunday, 14th of August, the White House continued refraining from commenting on the search warrant. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre repeatedly declined to answer questions on the matter during an interview with ABC News, citing the U.S. Justice Department's independence on law enforcement matters. When shown video of comments made by House Republican Elise Stefanik, a staunch Donald Trump loyalist, who described the search as complete abuse and overreach by the FBI, Karine Jean-Pierre broadly fired back. She said, "The Department of Justice, when it comes to law enforcement, is independent. This is what we believe, and this is what the president has said. This is not about politicizing anything. This is not true at all." Karine Jean-Pierre added a reminder that U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland was confirmed by the U.S. Senate in a bipartisan vote, and that Donald Trump nominated FBI Director Christopher Wray to his position in 2017.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us enlighten our minds with a wonderful saying from the immortal martyr of Karbala, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. There are 70 advantages for saying salam, that is, peace upon you. 69 for the one who greets first, and 1 for the person who responds to the greeting.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the patience and forbearance of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host Hussein Hinzano, and in today's lesson, we're talking about the patience and the forbearance of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Now, among the unequaled qualities in which the chief of the Matars had no peer was that of patience on the calamities of the world and the difficulties of the time. His Eminence Al-Imam Al-Hussein had tasted the bitterness of patience during his childhood when he had sat in grief of his grandfather's and mother's demise. When his grandfather passed away, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and when his mother, Sayyida Zahra salamullahi alayha, passed away, Al-Imam Hussein went through a very difficult time. At the time, Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam was forced to practice a lot of patience and forbearance towards these particular outcomings, towards these particular issues. Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam witnessed the horrifying events that were encountered by his respected father. Al-Imam Ali went through a very difficult time during his leadership period. He saw the atrocities and problems borne by his eminence, and during the time of the leadership of his brother Al-Imam Al-Hassan, also Al-Imam Hussein experienced the bitterness of patience. He had a lot of patience towards the period because his brother Al-Imam Al-Hassan also went through a very difficult period. But at the same time, Al-Imam Hussein didn't go back. He practiced a lot of patience on seeing this, in the condition that he saw how his soldiers betrayed him and how they cheated on him, till finally Muawiyah had him assassinated through poisoning. All this needed Imam Hussein. He grew up seeing all these bad atrocities done to his family. He grew up meeting his difficult period of time during his rulership, and also his brother's difficult period of time during their rulership. But at the same time, he practiced patience.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hossein Hinzano, and we are speaking about the patience and the forbearance of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Al-Imam Al-Hussein practiced a lot of patience during his lifetime because he grew up meeting a lot of atrocities, a lot of bad happenings during his life, including the death of his grandfather, who was a very close person to him, and also the death of his mother. Of course, she was a very lovable person to him. She really loved Al-Imam Hussein, and also Al-Imam Hussein loved her so much. And also, he faced a very difficult period during the rulership of his father, Al-Imam Ali alayhi salam, and during the rulership of his brother even, Al-Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. And the greatest calamity in front of which His Eminence Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam exhibited patience was that right before his very eyes, the lofty principles of the Islamic religion, the one that took place in front of his very eyes. And these are the lofty principles of the Islamic religions were being trampled upon, and inappropriate sayings were fabricated and falsely attributed to his grandfather. Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam lived in a period whereby when he was the leader, he could experience directly in front of his eyes that people are speaking against the religion of his grandfather. They're talking inappropriate sayings about the religion of his grandfather. And also they were attributing very bad words to his grandfather, which were changing and distorting the law of God. So this was the most painful thing that his venerable father was being announced and imprecated from the pulpits, and how the tyrant Yazid was busy. And also during the time when Yazid was busy in extermination of the Shias and the followers of Al-Imam Al-Ali. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Until next episode, inshallah, we'll meet again. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air.
Cultural news.
Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
The forest management plays a key role in mitigating climate change. Like many world countries, China has accelerated environmental and social structural changes in urban spaces to deal with this pertinent issue. The Dong Forest Park in Jinzhou, Liaoning province is one such project that has provided city dwellers enough space to breathe. It comes into being from what local people usually called rotten woods. The park on the northern bank of Xiaoling River covers an area of nearly 120 hectares. Nobody would come there before, as the place was full of flies and mosquitoes. But now, with the environment improved and water cleaned in the river, the place has turned into a wonderland, attracting locals and even foreign tourists.
Now the sky is blue, the water clean and the air fresh, with green greeting you wherever you go. The elderly play Tai Chi or do bodybuilding exercises here. Young people play football, basketball and table tennis.
Over the past 20 years, a large number of cities in China have undergone a brief but rapid urban expansion. Most of these cities are now facing social problems, such as an aging population and a high prevalence of chronic diseases. A comprehensive environmental improvement program in Jinzhou was initiated in 2014 in order to create space for those who want to take a break from their everyday works. England's Paradise Wildlife Park welcomes its new guest, an endangered red panda cub. The mother, Tilly, gave birth to the cub just 1 month after she lost her breeding partner, Nampang. Experts say Tilly had been under a breeding project for 4 years. The cub has been named Little Red, and his birth is being celebrated as a, quote, symbol of hope. Red pandas are classed as an endangered species and are on the red list of the International Union for Conservation of Nature. The bushy-tailed bamboo munchers dwell in high-altitude Asian forests, and their population is now fewer than 2,500. Lightning strikes are very powerful and misunderstood force of nature that we all often see being used in films. A spectacular lightning strike has illuminated the sky over the Scottish town of Dundee. A video from an eyewitness that captured the hypnotic scene has been shared on several social media platforms. The lightning in the clip can be seen sending several bolts in opposite directions. Below, a church spire is silhouetted against the lightning flashes. But lightning is not always spectacular, as sometimes it causes fire to tower and high rises. Last month, a wind turbine caught fire after being struck by a lightning bolt in North Texas, United States. Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals.
Stunning scenes in Spain as the last supermoon of the year illuminates the night sky amid fireworks and fairs marking the start of festivities for a public holiday. In Malaga, fireworks left the sky a mix of colours against the bright moon. There was also a spectacle of drones that lightened the sturgeon moon. Locals in the Canary Islands also celebrated the three-day holiday by lighting up a Ferris wheel as the full moon beamed beautifully in the sky. If the moon is within 10% of its closest distance to Earth at the moment of full moon, it is called a supermoon. The supermoon has various hues and appears bigger and brighter than when the moon is at its farthest point from Earth.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Have you ever heard of fighting nature with nature? Well, that's what the San Francisco metro system in the U.S. did to stop pigeons from overrunning the place. The station has hired a hawk as the new guard to patrol the area. Pac-Man is a five-year-old Harris's hawk who has taken up the perch at the station. In terms of experience, he is pretty new, as he finished training only 9 months ago. The station recently renovated its building, installing netting and spikes to prevent pigeons from nesting. But these birds still seem to find their way to hang around. So with the Falconer Force, Ricky Ortiz and his hawk were hired this summer to keep the pigeons at bay.
So a typical day is we get here, we make our round, we start off down in the bottom inside the facility, making sure there's no pigeons hanging out in there. And then we work our way up here to the platforms and just check the ledges and the roof and make sure that they're not trying to sneak in on us and keep them out. And he does a pretty good job of that.
The team patrols 3 days a week and Pac-Man is allowed to swoop in and scare any pigeons sitting around. The Falconer says less than half of the pigeons left after the first week of Pac-Man flying and establishing the territory. Commuters and station managers say they also noticed the difference. The Falconer says he usually keeps his feathery friend happy on the job by giving him snacks throughout the day. This also encourages the hawk not to feast on the pigeons and local rodents.
Technology helps transform the global food production system and mitigates its impact on the environment. China's autonomous region of Tibet is turning barren land into fertile one using greenhouse technology. Once removed, Beinan County is now the largest off-season vegetable supplier in Tibet. The region has taken advantage of its highland conditions to develop a state-of-the-art agricultural structure. Beinong has now more than 2,200 modern vegetable greenhouses and nearly 12,000 hectares of planting area, some built at unimaginable altitude. But one cannot deny the role of railways and highway transport for making this county a hub for organic vegetables. The income of locals has also been significantly improved, and they are now living a happy and prosperous life. If you're a private collector of wild animals, there is good news for you. A Pakistani zoo is auctioning off a dozen lions due to a lack of money to feed them and a space to house them. Lahore Safari Zoo currently has so many big cats that they have to take turns accessing paddocks. Officials say auctioning them will free up space and also reduce expenses. Zoo is currently housing 29 lions. The lions auctioned this week will be between 2 to 5 years of age. Each big cat is estimated to fetch around 150,000 Pakistan rupees. That's not too much, as some zookeepers claim. Even conservationists have expressed anger over auctioning lions to private collectors instead of transferring them to other zoos. Happy news for zoo goers in Nicaragua. Two adorable baby tapirs are born at a country's national zoo south of Managua, adding attractions to the visitors. Two endangered tapirs, a male and a female, were born hours apart at the weekend. In a video shared by the zoo, one of the newborns is seen suckling and walking near her mother. The director of the zoo says the babies are yet to be named but are in perfect health. Tapirs inhabit jungle and forest regions of South and Central America, with one species inhabiting Southeast Asia. They look something like pigs with trunks, but they are actually related to horses and rhinos. Nicaragua launched a project that seeks to conserve this animal in danger of extinction due to hunting and the destruction of natural habitat. Now we'll take you to mine-riddled French island, Chazoms, which is emerging from the ruins and gradually turning into workers' paradise. Chazoms, close to the port city of Saint-Malo, has an amazing landscape but remains uninhabited as it saw a devastating bombardment by the Allies during the World War II. The Nazi-occupied island was victim of the most bombings per square meter. Known as Martyred and Forbidden Island, it was opened only in 2018 after extensive demining efforts allowed the opening of a marked path. Now, every year, thousands of day trippers make the short boat journey, marveling at the spectacular maritime views and flourishing wildlife there. The safe area still makes up just 3% of the island, but it lets visitors wander between rusty cannons and bunkers. Some workers say they hope the trail will be lengthened to allow a complete tour of the island.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria. These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism. The Jamtal Glacier in Austria has been losing around 1 meter of its surface annually. Scientists say the ice is a precious archive that is simply melting away and are surveying the area. Austrian mountain researchers say the glaciers contain an invaluable trove of ancient frozen leaves and twigs and other scientific treasures that can be lost forever. They say the time capsules, including the remote Jamtal Valley, are falling victim to climate change. In the 1990s, tourists found that 5,300-year-old mummy of Iceman near the same area. According to the international data, global warming has raised temperatures in Europe's highest mountains by nearly 2 degrees Celsius in the past 120 years. French rescuers are racing against time to save a beluga whale stranded in Seine River near Paris. The beluga was first spotted stuck between two locks in the river from Paris to the English Channel on Tuesday. Specialists say the animal is undernourished and is refusing food. Warm water is also worsening the health of this creature, which is normally seen near Norway, some 3,000 kilometers to the north. Rescuers say they have only up to 48 hours to save the whale. They are now looking at the possibility of taking the beluga out of the water, treating it, and eventually transferring it out to the sea.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Fox News anchor Eric Schorn floated the possibility that former President Donald Trump may have tried to sell classified documents to Russia or to Saudi Arabia. The article you're about to hear has been written by Newsweek journalist Jason Lemon. The article has been published by Newsweek and is titled Fox News host floats possibility Trump tried to sell classified documents. Fox News anchor Eric Schorn has floated the possibility that former President Donald Trump may have tried to sell classified documents to Russia or to Saudi Arabia. The FBI executed a search warrant at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort residence on Monday, 8th of August, in search of top-secret and sensitive compartmentalized information, as well as other classified documents. The Washington Post reported on Thursday, 11th of August, that information regarding nuclear weapons was believed to be among the documents sought by federal agents. And a Russian state television host said officials in Moscow have already studied the records. Donald Trump described the report regarding nuclear weapons documents as a hoax. In a Sunday Fox News broadcast, Eric Schorn interviewed former intelligence officer and Russian expert Rebecca Koffler. At the start of the segment, the Fox News anchor raised questions about what Donald Trump may have done with the classified materials. Eric Schorn, citing reports, said that intelligence officials reportedly feared either the material was being mishandled or even possibly illegally transferred to others. And more questions are being raised this morning. Did former President Donald Trump try to sell or share the highly classified material to the Russians or to the Saudis or to others? Or were the documents innocently mishandled and stored because he thought he had a legal right to have them? The Fox News anchor Eric Schorn asked. Former intelligence officer and Russian expert Rebecca Koffler weighed in with her perspective, saying that Trump's Florida home as a storage for such documents presents a counterintelligence nightmare. The real question, Eric, is what Russian President Vladimir Putin has already done, Koffler said. The truth is, the United States is the top target for KGB and Russia's spy services. Rebecca Koffler added that Mar-a-Lago is a counterintelligence nightmare, meaning that spies from all over the world, Russia, China, and beyond, are always on the hunt to lay their hands on top secret information, especially something that is related to nuclear warfare doctrine. The fact that those boxes were not secure is a really grave concern, she said. Meanwhile, Russian media personalities have defended Donald Trump and also said that the classified documents were reviewed by Moscow officials. Last week, during the Russian TV news program 60 Minutes, military expert Igor Kravchenko echoed Donald Trump's assessment of the FBI raid, calling it a witch hunt. Igor Kravchenko said that as the most popular politician in the United States, Donald Trump was chosen as such a witch. They won't just be vilifying him, they'll be strangling him. These raids involving dozens of FBI officers and police dogs, this is a symbol of inordinate despotism, the Russian military expert added. Over the weekend, during a segment on a state-owned Russia One television channel, a host discussed the raid and said Russians had access to the documents seized from Mar-a-Lago in Florida. It turns out that the investigation against Trump has to do with the disappearance of secret documents from the White House related to the development of nuclear weapons by the United States. Host Evgeny Popov said. Popov added, the FBI isn't saying what kinds of weapons or what they found in Donald Trump's state. Obviously, if there were any important documents, they've been studying them in Moscow for a while. Meanwhile, Donald Trump has rejected reporting that there was information about nuclear weapons held at his Florida residence, Mar-a-Lago. Nuclear weapons issue is a hoax, just like Russia was a hoax. Two impeachments were a hoax. The Mueller investigation was a hoax, and much more. Same sleazy people involved, the former president wrote in a post on his Truth Social platform early on Friday morning, 12th of August. The former president has described the Justice Department probe and the FBI search of his home in Mar-a-Lago as a scam. Like all of the other hoaxes and scams that they've used to try and silence the voice of a vast majority of the American people, I have truth on my side. And when you have truth, you will ultimately be victorious, he wrote on Saturday on Truth Social. Newsweek has reached out to Donald Trump's press office for comment.
CIA in Indonesia.
Part 2.
The newly independent country is struggling in a deadly civil war. The rebels use a variety of armed weapons against the central government. They even enjoy an air force and aircraft bombing. It seems that the rebels are being supported by a powerful ally, an ally